it's Larry Herb, Xbox Live's Major Nelson. This is show number 218, recording this on Sunday, March 25th, 2007. And I have a special correspondent in my office. I have E. Hello, E.
Hello. To be a correspondent, though, wouldn't I have to be typing something?
No, you could be a correspondent by just being on the show. You're out in the field, you know, corresponding.
I'm Walter Cronkite today.
It's Walter, yeah, no more Walter Cronkite. So we got a good show for you today. We're going to talk to E about the upcoming Xbox Live maintenance, which you probably are all aware of. If you're not, one of the quick ways you can find out is if you logged on to Xbox Live, you'll have gotten a message that I'm trying to pull up right now that I don't have.
It's in there somewhere. You're unorganized. There it is.
There it is. Xbox Live. Here it is. So if you go into your Xbox 360, when you go in, you'll actually have a message from Xbox Live, and you open it up, and has a little logo on the right-hand side and says, you know, that Live is going to be available for approximately 14 hours. We'll talk about that. That's happening Tuesday. We're going to talk about that with E. I also have Jeff Keighley from GameSlice. We all know Jeff Keighley.
Yes, very much.
So Jeff's going to join us via phone, and also via phone from Rare Studios are Nick and Andy, who are going to tell us about Jetpack, which is releasing this week on Xbox Live Arcade.
Woohoo!
So a couple of big stories that hit this week, I want to get those out of the way right at the top of the show, E, is maintenance. And there's some intertwined issues here. So one of them is the Xbox Live security update that I posted this past Friday.
Which and actually doesn't have anything to do with the maintenance, although everyone thinks it does.
Right, and why don't we get? Do you want to talk about maintenance first or security first?
Get security out of there.
All right. So for those of you that don't know, I have a blog at majornelson.com, all you iTunes folks, and there were some claims floating around the internet earlier in the week, last week or this week, depending how you treat the previous 7 days, about Xbox Live security. And, you know, I want to be very clear. Xbox Live, the service, has not been hacked, E, right?
That's correct.
So the service is still intact. And there was never a fear there. But a security researcher, Kevin Finisterre, who, and I'm probably butchering his name, you know, contacted me and sent me some information, and we looked into it. And I actually made a post on this up on the blog, and I need to link to that because it's pretty important that you go up and read it, and I don't want to try to, you know, bring it here from memory. But that happened last week. There's some details up there that you can go up and read on the blog at majornelson.com. And then this coming week on Tuesday, we have a security maintenance window, E.
We have a maintenance window having nothing to do with security.
Okay.
The timing is purely coincidental.
Purely coincidental. Right. So you planned this months ago, right? How does that work? I mean, what's going on here? I usually have you on a couple times a year, but explain to us what's going on here.
So people who've been Xbox Live customers for a while have kind of gotten used to the fact that we do major upgrades to the service twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on which part of the globe you live in, there are spring and fall updates. Northern Hemisphere, at least, spring and fall.
It's a fall and spring.
Yes. And in order to stop confusing people, we've stopped internally referring to them as spring and fall, and now we just give them random code names and refer to them by those instead.
What's this one? Do I know this one?
I
know we're not supposed to talk about code names. I don't even think I know this one.
It's Odin, which it has no secret meaning.
It's what?
This is the Odin release.
I never heard that name before.
You're not paying attention to your email.
Okay.
So, but we, someone in a room, you know, it's like we need a code name and people blurt things out and someone goes, yeah, okay, we'll use that.
And usually, are they blurting? Is this usually before or after drinking?
No, this is in the middle of the day. No one's had anything to drink.
Yet.
And after years and years of coming up with code names, though,
right,
especially when you consider that everything we do has to have a code name,
right,
you've pretty much used all the good code names already. So you're just kind of randomly grabbing for something you haven't used in the last year or two.
Can we ask the community for a code name?
We can ask. We can't promise that we'll use it.
Okay.
So.
And you'll never know either. So anyway, go ahead.
So anyways, we started planning this release when we were finishing last fall's release.
Right.
So the planning for this started, I'm going to say off the top of my head, somewhere around last September.
Wow.
Where we sat down and figured out, hey, what are the things we need to do over the next year? What kind of time frame are we going to have? When are we going to get feature complete? When are we going to make sure that we don't have any bugs, et cetera, building the whole schedule.
Right.
And the very end of the schedule is, when are we going to upgrade the service? And we've had a target date at the end of March for months and months and months.
So upgrade and maintenance.
Yes. And in mid to late January, we actually sat down and looked at the calendar and looked at where we were on the schedule, how are things progressing, looked at all the various things going on, from what are our, you know, data center providers doing on the schedule? Are there any, you know, major events coming up? Are there any, like, special shows going on, like an E3 or a GDC,
right,
where we wouldn't want to do maintenance during that?
Of course.
And what came on the calendar was the 27th of March, next Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And we tried to, you know, set that date in stone as this is when we're going to take the service down and do our upgrade with these Odin service bits. Now, the next question everyone asked me is, well, if you've known about this for 2 months, why didn't you tell us 2 months ago?
Well, I know the answer to that, but go ahead and tell us.
So, 2 months ago, when we said it's March 27th, we were, you know, probably 80% confident that we were going to hit that date. But there were still a lot of things that had to happen. A lot of code that had to be written, a lot of code that had to be tested, hardware that had to arrive from the manufacturer, running tests with, you know, against old games, against old consoles. It, all this stuff has to come together, and until the very end, you really don't know for sure that it's all going to come together the way you think it is.
Mm-hmm.
So as you get closer to that date, you become more and more and more confident that, yes, we're going to be ready on that day. We can go. So we started communicating this date about 2 months ago to our business partners, game developers, publishers, the rest of Microsoft, etc.
Internal stuff.
Yes. And then about a week ago, we got to the point where, okay, everything is fully baked.
Locked and loaded.
The code is ready. The process to do the upgrade is ready. We've notified, you know, all of our partners. Now we're ready to go and actually tell our customers.
Right. Because we don't want to tell you beforehand because, well, we're not sure that it's going to be that date until about a week ago.
Right. And nothing bothers people more than when we tell them, hey, it's going to be this date, and they make plans around it, and then, you know, 2 weeks later we go, oops, sorry, it's not actually going to be that date, it's actually going to be some other date.
Right.
So until we're 100% positive, we'd rather just keep our mouths shut and make sure that when we come out and say it's going to be this day for this long, that we nail it.
So I posted last week on the blog the information. I think it was like Thursday night is when I came up and talked about that. So that's when basically you came to me, because I was asking you since last week, like a week and a half ago, when's the date? How long? And he kept pushing me out of his office. So now we know the date, which is,
yep.
So let's be clear. If you are listening to this show, because a lot of people download the show afterwards, if you're listening to the show before Tuesday, the 27th of March at 2:00 in the afternoon Pacific time, then this maintenance is going to take place or is in the process of taking place. If you're listening to the show afterwards, well, it doesn't matter. Live is back.
Yes, absolutely. You should listen to the show during the maintenance. It'll,
right.
One more thing you can do while Xbox Live
is
actually, not there for you.
Trixie had something up there about what to do during the maintenance. She posted a page.
She had a top 10 list.
The top 10 list,
yes.
which you and I helped kind of author.
Yes.
What was the one she pulled off there that we play with your Wii?
Yes. Uh-huh.
So maintenance. So what are some of the things that I... Because we've got global data centers.
We've got servers all over the place that we need to deal with. And it's not just servers. It's networking equipment. It's data in databases. When we do a major upgrade like this or major maintenance, we're generally touching a lot of components.
Right.
We don't like taking the service offline.
Right.
And so when we have to do that, it's because we really need to get in there and do some dirty work in the foundation. Now, generally, the next question is, well, what are you doing? What are the, you know, the really cool things that I'm going to see once this is done?
Answer?
The answer is immediately not anything.
Right.
We are a service platform. We, as Xbox Live, we're building the service that then games can do great things on top of.
And that you, as an end user, plug into with your games.
Right. So what has to happen is we have to work with our game developers to find out what features would they take advantage of, build them and deliver them before the game hits.
Right.
Because obviously if we don't deliver, then that feature of the game isn't going to work.
Right.
So we generally do, when we do a major upgrade on the service, we're thinking, you know, 6 months out.
Right.
What are the things coming in the next 6 months that are going to want, you know, great new functionality, that have great ideas on how they can do stuff that users are really going to like? And so over the next 6 months, you'll see things coming all over the place, whether it's from, you know, an Xbox 360 game, or whether it's on Xbox.com or Bungie.net, or it's on your Zune, whatever device you're using that talks to our service, mm-hmm. we're going to expose some new things that are going to let those people do really cool things for you.
All right, so I buy that. So this is really just setting the stage for the what is, we talked about the spring update, so the dashboard update where people tend to see features.
That is a big piece of it. Yeah, that's one of the more obvious pieces. Another thing we're working on, frankly, is we've spent a lot of time the last 6 months trying to figure out how do we get Xbox Live to the state that we don't have to turn it off in order to do these major upgrades.
I want
to
talk about that. So let's be clear. You guys, for the past 5 years that Live has been around, 5 years?
Four and a half.
Yeah. Every time we do one of these, sometimes it's a few hours, sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less, but there's a maintenance window where everybody's unavailable. But you're working on a situation where you're going to be able to do this. Basically, you're going to be able to do open heart surgery while the patient's awake.
That's the goal. It's a pretty hard one to go for. And honestly, until next fall rolls around, it's really going to be hard to say have we 100% achieved it.
Right.
I wouldn't want to come out and say today that, you know, guess what? Xbox Live is never going to go down again, because mm-hmm. I can't honestly promise that.
Right.
But we've had a lot of very smart people working on this for a while. And I think at the very least, when we deliver the fall update, the downtime will be less. Will it be zero? I don't know, but we're going to try really hard to make that happen.
That's interesting. So basically, a lot of people that have been on since the beta days, you're going to be like the old timers. I remember when it used to have to go offline, and soon we'll have to do that.
That's the goal.
That's mm-hmm. where we want to go. So there you go. That's the information on the maintenance. Again, it's happening on Tuesday, March 27th. It'll be from about midnight Pacific time till about 2 o'clock in the afternoon Pacific time. And then I got a link up on the blog that has little details on that. So.
Yep. Oh, I should address one other thing, because this has been like the most asked question on your blog since you posted, well, here's when the maintenance is going to happen. Well, why are you doing this on the same day that the Shivering Isles expansion
to ask you about that.
So the service is not offline all day.
Right.
Shivering Isles is still going to come out on Tuesday.
Yep.
It's just going to come out after we turn the service back on. So we'll turn the service back on, and then shortly thereafter, ta-da, Shivering Isles.
Later that
will
day,
be
Shivering Isles will be there.
Yes.
Okay. The other thing to also point out is that Xbox, since Xbox Live is connected to Xbox.com and our Xbox forums, those will also be offline as well and unavailable.
You'll be able to get into the parts that don't talk to Xbox Live.
Right.
So static web pages, those kind of things. You won't be able to post in the forums while we're doing this work. But you will be able to, you know, browse around Xbox.com, look at some of the pages there.
That's fun. All right. What are you playing this week? So I must point something out, is because he was going to kill me for this. So I posted earlier this week on the blog, a lot of people have been asking for some more sound effects. So I downloaded the Hidden Orb sound, which... So he just dropped his drink. I downloaded the Hidden Orb sound, and a lot of people, I put a little note at the bottom there that linking off to an orb hunting tip on Xbox.com that I found, and the line says, stuck on 499 orbs and can't seem to find the last one, we'll check out the orb hunting tips on Xbox.com. That was directed at you, because you have 499 orbs.
Yeah.
Let me be clear, you have 499 agility orbs.
Yes.
Because you haven't found your...
499 hidden orbs would be really cool, because there's only 300.
There's only 300. I know that, I'm just saying.
So I'm currently at 499 agility orbs. I have 230 some hidden orbs, and I found those just by sheer accident. I'm not looking for them. I have, however, been looking for that last agility orb for gameplay between 10 and 20 hours now, and I've tried all sorts of different things. I took the scenic route. I climbed on a police car and just let it carry me around the city for
And what
a few
happened
hours.
When you did that?
It was late, and eventually I fell asleep. But I've looked from the rooftops. I've looked from ground level. I've swam around each island. I have done everything, and I'm still missing that one orb. I'm sure I've walked past it a dozen times. I don't know where it is. It's driving me bonkers, and I'm having great difficulty moving on. I can't stop at 499 orbs.
I think people hear that. How much is that gamer score?
50, I think. It's not about the gamer score.
I know, it's not about the gamer score.
It has nothing to do about the gamer score. So if you, I have 499. There's only one left.
If you found all 500, you know, feel free to give E some tips.
Yeah, thanks. That's part of the problem, actually, is if you have 499, it's not like there's any idea where that 500 is.
Yeah, you have
is.
No idea. I mean,
you don't know which third of the city it's in. Or whether
and we've seen all these online guides, and you haven't used one.
I have not used one. I don't want to do it that way. I've gotten 499 on my own. I would like to get 500 on my own. But even if I wanted to use the guides, at this point, they wouldn't be very helpful because the guide doesn't know which one I'm missing.
Right. You got to literally start at the first one of the guide and go check, check, check. And it may be the third one that you get to on the guide. It may be the 499th one you get to on the guide.
And since I've already, you know, gone building to building, high and low, gone through, you know, the various hills and trees and swam around each of the island, you know, there's not a whole lot of things left that I can do at this point except find the stupid thing.
Except find it. So anyway, there's E's frustration.
Yeah. So I am still playing Crackdown.
So I was looking for you. Have you played Castlevania?
I played some this morning, actually.
How was it?
I like it. It's a good game. The one tip I will give that doesn't seem to be in the help, as far as I can tell, is the back button is how you pull up your inventory and equip your weapons and your spells.
Oh, I didn't
and all
know that.
And if you don't use the back button, you'll pick up a short sword at the very beginning of the game, and you won't use it. You'll still be punching the bad guys, which doesn't work very well.
I didn't know that.
Yes. Back button is your friend in Castlevania.
Back button. Nice. Right, so there you go. You know what I was playing also? A couple games I put in this week are Armored Core 4 and Earth Defense Force 2017.
And?
We gotta play those, you and me. Earth Defense Force, I think I played it last night. I was chatting with Tycho, who was playing another game. And I was explaining to him this game, and everyone is raving about this game. Have you seen the threads over at NeoGAF?
I have not.
They're like, this is the greatest game ever. And I'm sorry, guys, I'm not seeing it, so it's just not flipping my Switch.
I mean, everyone likes different kinds of games.
Yep, exactly.
Some games that, you know, I'm not big on big open-ended RPGs like Oblivion. A lot of people love them. I can appreciate the game technically as, wow, that's cool. Doesn't mean I'm going to spend a lot of time playing it. You know, what am I playing lately? I haven't played a lot of new stuff lately. Crackdown.
Right. Still.
Yes, still. Halo 2 last night until, I think we quit at about 4 a.m. What else? Castlevania.
Right.
Played a little Worms right before I came over here. A good mix of stuff.
I'm trying to see what I got in here. I don't really have anything new in here. We're getting games in all the time. You know what I don't do? I want to stop down for a second, and we are going to go to Jeff Keighley. Jeff Keighley and I chatted earlier this week, so let's... he and I were just talking about PS3, and we're going to talk about that after Jeff's interview. We're talking about the PS3 launch that happened this week and a few other things. So here's the interview I did with Jeff. All right, on the line with me today is Jeff Keighley, who is a respected, and I don't know if that's possible, but you're a respected video game journalist, host of Gamehead. You're from Spike TV, G4. I mean, Jeff, you've been around the block quite a bit, haven't you?
Yeah, well, I've never been on the Major Nelson podcast, though. So
well,
the circle is complete.
I don't know if you can add that to your Wikipedia entry, but feel free to.
very important. I'm glad to know. I listen to the show, and you know, it's great to finally be on it.
Well, you and I were talking last, you know, a couple of weeks ago down at the GDC, the Game Developers Conference, and you were hosting the panel discussion that you were so gracious to agree to allow me to put up. And let's talk about that a little bit, about the panel discussion. Some people may have listened to it, maybe they didn't, but I want to talk about that and then some of your overall impressions of GDC this year.
Yeah, so we had a great panel discussion, which was, you know, Peter Molyneux, who's known for, obviously, you know, Fable, Black and White, Populous, Ray Mzika from BioWare, who's you know, working on Mass Effect, has done Knights of the Old Republic, and then Sakaguchi-san from Japan, who's, you know, working on Blue Dragon, Lost Odyssey, lots of great RPGs. So the idea was getting all three of them together in a room to talk about the future of role-playing games. And what's interesting to me is that the idea of a role-playing game has really changed, I think, from a decade ago when I remember RPGs were basically seen as swords and sorcery dungeon crawls.
Yep.
And now we're seeing even a game like Crackdown, a lot of people say that's, you know, an action game with RPG elements, or people call Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, you know, having RPG elements to it. And I think, you know, now we're seeing more and more action games encompassing RPGs, so the idea of what is an RPG is starting to change, I think, and we're seeing action games move more towards RPGs, and RPGs, you know, including more real-time action in a game like Mass Effect, you know, I saw the Mass Effect demo at GDC, and I mean, the elements of it, it sort of feels to me almost like Gears of War. Did you see it?
Oh, I sure did. It looks fantastic.
There's that one area where you're sort of, you know, running along, you're taking cover, and I mean, it's got that Gears of War sort of feel to it, and that's really exciting to me to see the storytelling that BioWare is doing in Mass Effect grafted onto sort of this action engine, but still with the depth of character development of an RPG, and I think that's where RPGs are going. So it was interesting to sort of hear all these guys talk about where they see RPG stories going, gameplay, and also the question about, you know, online, because I think that's such an important thing to the Xbox audience, and, you know, so far, I don't think anyone's really cracked how to do online for an RPG in a really compelling way.
What do you think is keeping people from cracking that open and figuring out how to do it? I mean, let's back up a little bit. One would argue that WoW has done it and nailed it.
Well, absolutely on the PC. I'm just saying, sure. You know, on the consoles, sure. I think really, I mean, MMOs, no one's really figured out how to do a particularly successful MMO on the consoles, which I think is, you know, is interesting. The PC space, WoW is, you know, that's the gold standard.
You know, I was talking with somebody down the hallway who started getting into WoW again after like 2 years.
Yeah.
And he and I were just talking about this yesterday. Do you think it's because of the casual nature of the console player? You know, we just want to walk into our living rooms, throw a disc in, kick back, play for an hour, maybe 2 hours, and leave. And maybe the next day we're playing something else.
Yeah, I think that might be part of it. You know, something like WoW, when you're PC, I think a lot of people are used to coming home, you know, doing work, surfing the internet, and that's sort of a place where, you know, you can sit for a number of hours. Whereas a TV, you know, in a lot of homes, it's like, you have to play a game for a couple hours because, you know, the wife wants to watch Grey's Anatomy or something.
Right,
you,
right.
You can't be, just log off. So that sort of persistent state of the world is something that, you know, I think sort of caters to the PC, but you've also got to remember, I mean, not a lot of people have tried MMOs on the consoles yet.
Right.
I mean, it's not like there's been a 360 MMO. You know, if World of Warcraft came out for the 360, I think it would do pretty darn well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think it's the kind of thing where it's going to tank because it's on a console, not on the PC.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of actually surprised that there aren't more companies coming out with trying MMOs in, you know, on the next gen systems. I think we're going to see stuff. And obviously, I think Microsoft's announced they're doing the. Aren't they doing that superhero one?
The Marvel one.
The Marvel one, exactly, which we don't know much about, but I think they've talked about that coming out down the road. And, you know, there have been experiments. So I don't know if the solution is necessarily an MMO. I think what we're actually going to see with RPGs is a lot of emphasis on co-op play, which I think is going to be really interesting to see, you know, the idea of a small party of people being, you know, sort of like Crackdown, but I think taken to the next level, with the idea that you and your buddies can actually play through an RPG story. But, you know, a lot of RPGs have party members in them, so imagine if those three or four party members were actually your buddies on your friends list.
You
play again. So I think that's the idea of that stuff coming in, I think, is what's going to happen with multiplayer. But, yeah, it's just amazing that RPGs are really sort of behind the curve, I think, with what they're doing with online.
Yeah, I mean, have you been playing any of Shadowrun?
Yeah, you know, I've seen Shadowrun. I don't have a copy of it yet. But, yeah, I mean, definitely I think that... But you wouldn't call that an RPG, would you?
No, it's kind of weird. You know, you talked about Crackdown and the leveling up. And the problem is with Crackdown, the leveling up is more persistent. And it's critical to the progression of how you're getting through the story and all the missions.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, Shadowrun is a little bit more... At least currently as it is, and again, this is beta, disclaimer, is it's more localized, meaning you can level up your characters and get cash, you know, kind of like, you know, all the usual games.
But I
haven't gotten that sense because I haven't played the single player yet. So maybe there's some single player elements there to that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, for the multiplayer, it's, you know, key to... That's always the challenge with these MMOs or taking RPGs into the online world is how do you make it so the initial, you know, the player who's just starting out on level 1 isn't just, you know, immediately sort of, you know, swiped down by someone who's level 60.
Right.
And sort of figuring out the right way, you know, that sort of rock, paper, scissors balance between all the different characters in these games. So, yeah, I it's really interesting to see what's going to happen with online. But I just think, you know, people spend so much time with these characters in these RPGs, and they customize them, and, they really feel like they're their avatar in this world. It's like people don't want to leave them behind when the single-player story's over.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, how can you take that avatar online to kind of continue experience in the world? So whoever really cracks that, I think especially on the 360, it's going to be, you know, incredibly powerful. And, you know how important online is to people these days. And
yeah,
it's just interesting that RPGs, it's taken so long for someone to really crack the code and figure it out. I guess because the games are so epic, the challenge that RPG guys have is that it's so hard to make the single-player game, then to add multiplayer on top of it.
Right.
It's difficult. And I'm not one of those people that thinks every game needs to have single-player and multiplayer. And I think actually a lot of games, you know, the single-player experience isn't good. Why even bother with the multiplayer?
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of, you know, game companies just feel that they have to put out a game with single-player and multiplayer because, you know, us as journalists are going to ding them if there's no multiplayer.
Yeah, because it's almost like it's a checkbox. You have to have it.
Exactly, yeah. And it's like people, you know, sort of say, oh, well, you know, if we don't have multiplayer, you know, the marketing people literally probably sit there with the developers and say, well, if we don't have multiplayer, we're going to get, you know, 5 less points in OXM.
Right.
So we've got to have multiplayer. So they, you know, kludge together some crappy multiplayer mode just to say that they have it. And that's why actually I sort of like that RPG developers aren't going in that direction. I mean, I think they're all saying, hey, we've got to figure out a really smart way to do an RPG. But you remember on the panel, I mean, Sakaguchi was saying, you know, he definitely has interest in doing an MMO for the U.S. space.
Yep.
BioWare talked about how they're doing some stuff down in their Austin studio that has, you know, some online elements. So I think, and, you know, Peter Molyneux was pretty heavily hinting that Fable 2 has some type of online component to it, which he wouldn't get specific about.
Yeah, it was a great panel, and I want to thank you for coming down and spending some time.
No, it was tons of fun.
Because it was really good to see you again. But let's talk about more about GDC. I mean, obviously the big thing that came out of GDC, and I feel like I'm talking about this weeks now, is of course Sony Home. So what's your first taste test on that?
Well, I think in my initial read on it was obviously, I think, excitement about the idea. And, you know, I'll rib Xbox a little bit about it. I mean, for a long time, Xbox talked about how, you know, they had thought leadership in the space and thought leadership with online. I think
right,
that was absolutely true up until GDC. And I think once, you know, I saw what Sony was doing with Home, you look at it and you definitely say, all right, this feels like sort of a step beyond what we've experienced with 360. And that, you know, feels very progressive. Is the execution going to be exactly, you know, what everyone hopes it's going to be? Well, we'll just have to wait and see. I heard people afterwards from Microsoft were claiming to me, oh, is it just a bunch of video that they were showing? Is it real? And, you know, I've talked to people at Sony that are actually on the service right now. I think they're launching a beta sometime in April where some consumers will get to go on. So I think it's real. You know, is it? A lot of people like to say, oh, is this kind of, you know, the next level of Xbox Live? I think it's something very different than Xbox Live. And, you know, it's not like they have a trophy room and Xbox has achievements and, you know, there's some sort of parallels between the two services. But, I mean, it really, to me, feels like sort of a virtual community.
Right.
And, you know, how will I use that as a gamer? I think it's still a little up in the air. You know, I don't use my 360 a lot now to, like, chat with friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just call people on the phone or email them. But I think for a certain audience, you know, the social aspect will be fun, the idea that you can sort of walk into someone's room. And I think the apartment is what really excites me the most about it, sort of the personal space.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I we talked about this on my show last week. I think it's interesting. I'm thrilled that they're moving. They're kind of doing something in a different direction, which is actually better for us and as the industry in a whole, because it's going to cause us to look at it and think and go, maybe there is something here, or let's take the best of this and try to Xbox 360-ify it. And, you know, we've been working on some stuff as well, but it's, you know, I look at the apartment thing, I'm like, that's interesting. I just don't know if I need another I got a home and I got an office. I don't know if I need another place to mess up and store stuff, but that's just
But you have, like, you know, people have a MySpace page and they
right,
love to deck that out with photos
right,
and videos and, you know, their favorite song. And
yeah, the thing that I think about that is, though, and I totally agree with you, but that's accessible anytime from anywhere. And this,
right,
the way I understand the Sony approach is that my apartment is only going to be there when I'm online. And that worries me.
I think they'll be in sort of an instantiation of it that's there when you're not online. I don't know if it's. I think like maybe your media is not accessible. Or
yeah, who knows? I mean, and again, you and I can go round and round on this forever, but it's gonna you put a fine point on it. Let's see what happens. Let's see what it finally comes out in terms of the execution. And it's at least they're doing something. Let's put it that way.
Well, that's the thing. I think it's exciting to see. You know, that's what they needed to do strategically. I think is, you know, instead of trying to match Xbox Live feature by feature, I think they're saying we're going to zig where Microsoft is zagging. So
right.
they're not doing achievement points. They're doing this trophy room.
Right.
And, you know, I'm sure some of it absolutely is influenced by what Xbox did in the space. But, you know, for Sony, that was always attacked for being so far behind with online, I think this was a big leap forward for them to say, hey, we're going to take this sort of Second Life kind of, you know, vibe and mesh it with some elements of Xbox Live and then add in some new elements. And I think, you know, the idea of a cyber world, which Sony had been talking about for, you know, a decade,
right.
The idea that they were going to create this, you know, online 3D cyber world, I think it's interesting. And, you know, we'll see, you know, what will that mean for the PlayStation Store? Will it be sort of literally a shopping mall now where you can walk into different stores and buy different items? What I love about it, though, is that it doesn't sound like you have to do everything that way.
Right.
I love the cross-media bar on the PlayStation 3. I just think it's so fast and so easy to access your media.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people will just want that. You know, they don't want to necessarily have to walk to the other side of a mall when they want to download the new demo.
Right.
They just want to be able to download it just like on Xbox Live and click something. So I think that's still going to be available, but this it's free, first of all, which I think is, you know, amazing that they're going to, you know, make this available for free for everyone. So it's
right.
Like, use it if you want to use it, and if you don't, you know, you don't have to. But, you know, that's the thing I think, you know, and that's the challenge for Xbox, is to still justify charging $50 a year for the service when Sony's offering a lot of this stuff for free. And it'll just be interesting to see over time what the real value is to the consumer out of the Sony service and
right.
The Xbox service. And it's a really interesting battle. And I just think now, you know, Sony's brought something to the table that will at least be different. And
right.
As you said, it'll challenge Xbox to see, you know, what can we do? And, you know, who knows? Maybe you'll see Second Life on the 360 or something
like
that.
It's definitely moving us. And again, it's causing us to think in a lot of different directions. One thing I am excited about, did you get any time to spend with Little Big Planet?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a game, actually, that you look at, and it's very non-typical of what Sony would do, and I think that's what's exciting about it.
Yeah.
You know, the idea of user-created content, and that's what's, you know, I mean, I remember back, it was E3-05 when Jay Allard was talking about Velocity Girl.
Oh, that was GDC-05, I believe.
Well, there was, what was the skate park for Tony Hawk? I think that was, like, was it E3?
I think it was.
Maybe it was GDC and E3 who
right.
started talking about that stuff. And the idea of, you know, user-created content being an important part of stuff. And I think, you know, everyone realizes that this is sort of the next revolution, is the idea of people at home being able to kind of create content for a game. And Little Big Planet is this, I guess it's sort of like a side-scroller, but you can create your own levels. It reminds me a lot of an old PC game called The Incredible Machines that Sierra did that was basically this game where you had all these different little contraptions, and you had this ball, and you could literally put it in a machine, and you could create, you have different gears. And
it was very Rube Goldberg-esque.
Exactly. And you basically went through and you created this sort of virtual puzzle that and then you could upload it online, other people could try and solve the puzzle. And I think that's sort of what's happening now with Little Big Planet. You can literally create your own level inside of the game world. And it's, you know, based on what they showed, it looks like it's going to be pretty easy to build something.
Yeah.
This isn't like, you know, building a mod for Unreal or something where you really have to have a lot of technical proficiency. So we'll see.
Yeah, and then there's the other side of it. You talked about user-created content, because we actually have that already today with the XNA program. And what we're doing there.
But that's
way geeky, though.
That's what I mean. It's sort of like, it feels to me much more approachable. And XNA,
right.
You know, you've got to be a programmer, you've got to be in the Creators Club. And absolutely, I think that's happening, and there are great games coming out of that. But those are programmers. And I love the idea that I could, you know, my sister could sit down in front of the Xbox 360.
Right.
Make something. And I don't know, you know, it's again, the proof will sort of, you know, the proof of the pudding's in the tasting, as Peter Moore likes to say. And it's sort of, you know, you have to sort of wait and see, does this, you know, is the game really as intuitive as they say it's going to be? Is it fun to build these levels? But I just love the idea of user-created
right.
content being available on these consoles, which is something that really pushed the PC gaming market forward in a big way throughout the 90s with a lot of, you know, downloadable mods and levels for games.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't really seen a lot of that on the consoles, you know, especially because these networks are sort of more closed networks. And, the games, basically also because, you know, it's not a keyboard and mouse, which is what you need to build levels
right.
for games. So I think it'll be really interesting to see what, you know, I think Little Big Planet absolutely speaks to sort of something we're going to see not just on PlayStation, but on every system out there. I mean, even look at the Miis on the Wii. I mean,
oh,
how much
yeah.
fun it is to make those.
Yeah. That is a game unto itself. My wife sat there for 45 minutes making a Mii of me. It's crazy.
Yeah, Yeah, and that's what's sort of fun. So I think more, you know, more and more about easy user-created content that can be shared around the world is absolutely where things are going. I think XNA is sort of a flavor of that, but I have no doubt, you know, Xbox is going to do similar stuff where you can, you know, create and share content, you know, amongst gamers just by using your controller.
Let's switch over to what's going on in Europe. I mean, you track a lot of what's going on. You are, you know, pretty big in this space. You track this space. What do you think is going to happen in Europe? So the Xbox 360 has been out for a year. The PS3 is rolling into town. What do you think is going to happen now that they've changed that hardware?
Oh, you mean by taking out the backwards compatibility chip?
Yeah, going to a software solution.
Yeah, I mean, I saw they posted the list online, and it looks like, you know, sort of north of 75% of the games for PlayStation 2 are going to work on the PlayStation 3. I mean, I beat up Microsoft a lot over the backwards compatibility story for 360.
Right.
Initially, and I think there were, you know, a lot of issues there. And yeah, I was certainly surprised when Sony announced that they were taking out the Emotion Engine chip in Europe. My only thought on why that happened is that I think they were probably working on software compatibility behind the scenes, and for the U.S. and Japanese launch, I guess they didn't have enough games ready, so they decided, let's take the hit, let's put that chip in the initial shipment.
Right.
And now the team has sort of gotten to a point where they're comfortable with the number of games that work, so they're pulling out the Emotion Engine chip. But yes, Europe will be really interesting. I mean, Xbox, you know, has been very aggressive there. I think 360 is selling relatively well in the United Kingdom. The other territories, I don't think it's doing nearly as well as people had hoped.
Mm-hmm.
The Wii, I think, is doing relatively well, but again, there's sort of issues with the quantities that are going to be out there. Sony says that they're shipping a lot of PS3s to Europe. You know, some people would probably claim that, you know, they're not selling in the U.S., so why not ship them to Europe type of thing.
Bundle them up and send them overseas.
Yeah, and I don't think that's quite what's happening, but they're definitely putting a lot of inventory into the channel in Europe. So, I think it'll be interesting to see. I mean, Europe has definitely been a stronghold for Sony in the past, and I know Microsoft has viewed that as, you know, a real key strategic area for, you know, potential for growth for the Xbox platform. So I don't know what's going to happen. I think, you know, we'll know pretty soon how well things are going for Sony. And I think, you know, they'll have a great launch. And you look at, you know, what happened in the U.S. with PS3. I mean, a lot of hype, a lot of excitement. The early hardcore adopters will show up there to buy it on day one.
Yeah.
And the real story will roll out over the summer months when we sort of see, you know, what's happening with the quantities of sales. I mean, even here in the U.S., it was interesting because, you know, the February numbers came out, and everyone was basically talking about, you know, the doomsday for Sony because, you know, PlayStation only sold 127,000 units or whatever it was,
right?
And Xbox, you know, basically sold double.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's a snapshot of 1 month. I think absolutely it speaks to the fact that there's not this sort of built-up demand for PlayStation 3 that I think everyone was, you know, Sony was certainly expecting, I think, that, you know, there was, you know, for all of 2007 was going to be impossible to get one because there were these tens of millions of PlayStation owners who just had to get a PlayStation 3.
But what's interesting is that, I don't want to cut you off, but I was reading this as well, the same numbers, and what amazed me was not the number of 360s sold or the number of PS3s or Wii's, but just the number of PS2s that are moving.
Yep.
That is phenomenal.
No, and that's, you know, PlayStation 2, I think, is really, it's an amazing story, I think, about the success of that machine. And, you know, God of War 2 just came out, which is a phenomenal game.
Fantastic.
For PlayStation 2. And I think, you know, Sony is really, it really shows that, I mean, this console race is just so dramatically different than anyone else out there. Because, I mean, you got to remember that these, you know, PlayStation 3, we're talking $500, $600. Xbox 360, we're talking, you know, $299, $399, maybe even more. And it's, you know, it's a situation that these systems are such different price points now.
Right.
That it's not just the same old race of three boxes coming out for $299. And it's like, yeah, you know, PS3 sold way less in February than people expected. But, you know, people kind of forget that this is not a $299 box. And this is a much more expensive box. And what I think PS2 shows is that there's a lower end of the market that really has an appetite for just playing games. And I expect, you know, people that are buying a PS2 right now, they're not the hardcore guys who are listening to this podcast,
right,
or, you know, reading my articles and in enthusiast magazines. I mean, these are mainstream consumers who maybe have never owned a game console before and are just buying one because, you know, PS2 is a great deal at $129. And it shows that there's a lower end of the market. And, I mean, that's really what's going to help Sony, you know, mine a lot of profit for a while, is that lower end of the market. And, you know, that's the unfortunate thing about Xbox is just sort of, I think, given the cost of goods with the Xbox One, it's just Microsoft wasn't able to kind of keep continuing to push that platform.
Sure, sure.
So it sort of somewhat exposes Microsoft to the lower end of the market, because I think everyone's saying that the higher end, with, you know, not just PlayStation 3, but with Xbox 360, I mean, the ramp up of consumers to getting those next-gen systems is slower than anyone expected, because they're just so expensive right now. And it's like, you know, to make that investment, the hardcore guys absolutely are going to be there. And Xbox 360 has those 10 million hardcore guys, but the real battle is for the hearts and minds of those other 90 million people that bought a PlayStation 2 and haven't decided what they're going to do for the next generation.
No, yeah, the PlayStation 2 is, like you said, is an unbelievable deal. It's got, you know, it's $129 or so, maybe even less. You've got literally thousands of titles to choose from. Some are pretty damn good, and some maybe not so much. But regardless, the library is just, it's overwhelming. I also wonder if, you know, we talked about this console race being much different. Do you think it's also much different, Jeff, because we have so much entertainment now? We've got YouTube. We've got, you know, we talked about MySpace. There's just so many ways. We've got hundreds of channels on cable, as always. You know, satellite television, the video marketplace on Xbox. Do you just think there's a glut of entertainment right now?
Yes, I mean, there's been a lot of stuff, but you're right. I mean, now there's definitely a lot more ways to access entertainment. I think, you know, people, if they want to play games, they'll have a system to play games on. I think, you know, one of the big issues, I think, right now is that, you know, lots of people have HDTVs among the hardcore, but, you know, HDTV is not as sort of prevalent out there as, you know, as it should be right now. And I think, it will absolutely be changing over the next couple of years. I think, you know, for a lot of people, there's a view with Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3, you know, I'm going to wait until I get an HDTV and then get one of those systems.
Right.
And I think that's part of the thing is, you know, these are big leaps forward in technology. So, yeah, there's a lot of entertainment out there. I think, you know, people don't necessarily have the visual equipment to necessarily max out the experience on these next-gen systems. And, yeah, I think it does really come down to the games and whether, you know, is there a game that you want to play so much that it justifies going out and making that purchase. And, you know, I'd argue part of the issue with PlayStation 3 right now is that there's not that killer app that everyone wants to, you know, really rush out and buy. And it's like if it's $600 out of your pocket, you really have to feel that when you put down that money, you're really going to get your money's worth. And I think, you know, Xbox has had Gears of War, which I think was a, you know, huge success, and that helped, you know, the hardcore, you know, with a game that they really wanted to go out and buy. And then, you know, we'll see this year, I think, with Halo. It's, you know, hopefully that will be the game for you guys that will really push, you know, the mainstream consumers into the stores to buy an Xbox 360. And it's, you know, not because they have an extra $400 sitting around, but because they really want to find that money. And, you know, it's the opportunity cost. As you said, there's so many entertainment options out there. You have to decide that you want to spend $400 on your Xbox 360 and buy Halo 3 instead of, you know, doing something else with your entertainment dollars.
I think the other thing is gamers, I mean, you and I grew up playing games. That's what we did when we were young. And we're now an older demographic. You and I are arguably older than some of our readers and listeners.
Right.
And we're married. Maybe some of us have kids. So now we have perhaps that conversation about buying the $300, $400 Xbox or the $600 or $700 PS3 is now a conversation you have to have with your wife.
Yeah.
And guys that are married out there are nodding their heads right now. You young guys don't get it, but you will. It's an interesting conversation about why you need to spend that money on this device. Do you think that's something? Is that basically the gamers are getting older and there's a lot more involved in the decision?
Yeah, and I think, and also, you know, you look at the value proposition with these boxes, and it's, you know, it's not just about gaming. So, you know, PlayStation 3, it's a question about, do we want a high-definition DVD player?
Right.
Even with the 360, it's like, do we buy, you know, the HD DVD add-on? Because, you know, maybe the wife wants to watch movies
right.
in high-definition but doesn't want to play games. And, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of those conversations about what is sort of going to be our, you know, our media center around the home. And, I mean, you look at the success of, you know, something like the Nintendo DS and how well that's doing in the handheld space. And, you know, that speaks to the fact that, you know, portable, I think, is another market where sometimes, you know, on the main TV, the wife wants to watch Grey's Anatomy, but you can be off, you know, playing on your DS or your PSP, and it just, you know, becomes a conversation about what's going to happen in the living room
right.
with this game console. And, you know, it's also, it, you know, it's much like the conversation, you know, all these guys are having with their wives, too, about, like, doing an HDTV.
Right. Yeah, you're right. It absolutely backs up to every you know, the wife acceptance factor is, do you need the HDTV? Because when my wife looks at our HDTV, when I first got it a few years ago, I was like, doesn't that look amazing? And she never looked at the HD channels and said, that looks really good. She flipped it around on me and always looked at the other channels and said, why do they look so bad? And it was just, it's interesting how a woman thinks about, you know, how my wife specifically, how she thinks about these things. But you're absolutely right. There's a lot of factors here. I don't have much more time, so I want to wrap it up. But I want to ask you about, you're writing for a lot of, you know, you're on Spike TV, you got Gamehead on Spike TV, Business 2.0, EGM, you're on Entertainment Weekly, OXM. What are you seeing as a theme in the industry moving forward over the next, you know, 12 to 18 to 24 months? What is, from where you're sitting, because you're, you know, I'm so myopic on just Xbox, and granted, I'm a gamer and I play all the different platforms, but you kind of have a different level of access, you know, than Major Nelson does. So what do you think from what you're seeing and where you're sitting? Where are we going?
Well, I think, you know, like we've talked about here, I think user-generated content is absolutely huge. I think this idea of broadening the base of gamers, you know, the Wii right now is really the big story in media, just generally in the mainstream media, especially about what success Nintendo is having. And this is a company that, you know, you got to remember, 3-4 years ago, people were making fun of Nintendo for, you know, the GameCube being this, you know, purple little lunchbox that no one wanted to buy. And, you know, now Nintendo there's a real resurgence there. And it's not just about Nintendo's story, but it's about the idea of broadening the base of games and users. And this isn't just, you know, about Xbox Live Arcade. It's about the idea of just creating games that appeal to a wide swath of demographics. And I look at a title like a Brain Age, or even, like we talked about, like creating Miis on the Wii and how much fun those things are. And they're not even really typical games. And I think what we're going to see, you know, especially with digital distribution, with PlayStation Network, with Virtual Console, with Xbox Live Arcade, I think we're going to see a lot of different forms of games. And the idea of a $60 boxed product that you're going to go out and buy and play for 10 hours and be done with is just going to, it's not going to go away, but it's going to become much less prominent, I think, you know, 12 to 18 months from now.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to see, you know, look at, I mean, Grand Theft Auto 4, you know, we're just starting to hear a little bit of information about that. And we know, you know, there's downloadable content coming to the Xbox 360 and how that's just going to dramatically change the relationship between, you know, between the gamer and the game. Mm-hmm. And the idea that, you know, you're going to finish the game, you're going to have these other packs you can download, and then maybe the idea of user-created content coming into some of these games and multiplayer. And I just think the typical boxed product idea of a video game is really going to change. And I'm really excited about sort of the opportunities that that's going to create for developers. I mean, we talk about episodic content. What's that going to mean?
Right.
And the idea is, you know, Halo 3 is going to come out, but what if there were, you know, ongoing Halo 3 stories that you could download on Xbox Marketplace? And just that whole idea of your relationship with the game, I think, is really going to change. And that's exciting to me to just sort of see how the industry is changing. And it also creates more entry points because it's not just, you know, the $20 million development cost game that's being made. You know, you talked about XNA, you talked about Xbox Live Arcade. I mean, those things are really enabling a whole new group of game creators. And I think that's really going to, it's great because it's going to lead to more creativity. And for, you know, a couple of years, people in the business were really worried that, oh, these next-gen games are going to cost so much money to make, and, you know, publishers are going to make so few bets that we're only going to see, you know, a couple good games a year, and they're only going to bet on proven franchises and sequels because they can't take risks. And now when I look at all the stuff that's happening with digital distribution, it really gives me a lot of hope that there's going to be a ton of creativity coming to the business.
Yeah, it's going to be it's definitely a good time, regardless of what console you own, even if it's the PS2. I mean, look at God of War.
Did you own them all, Major?
I own most of them. I must say, because of my, I didn't have the money to go out and buy them. I had to be very judicious of where I spent my money. But I own most of them. You know, I spent my youth playing. Do you remember The Odyssey?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, of course. The Odyssey, you know, of course, Activision jamming your finger into the, or Intellivision and jamming your finger into the corner of that crazy disc. So, yeah,
it sounds like you got the Wii, you've got obviously the 360, and you have a PS3?
I don't have a PS3 yet. I just to get to what you said, I haven't found the compelling killer app for me to go, you know what, this is $700 I need to buy. And, you know, maybe the Home is it. Who knows?
People kept asking me that at GDC, like, oh, is Home the killer app for PlayStation? And I don't believe that at all. I mean, I think it's a great value add, but, you know, no one is going to go. I mean, if you really want a virtual community to go and talk to friends with, you know, you'll download Second Life for free.
Yeah, you're going
to
do, and you're absolutely right, Second Life.
No one's going to spend, you know, $600 to get that, but I think if you have the games that get you to buy the system, if you feel that there's, you know, enough software out there that makes it worthwhile, then something like Home is a great value add. It makes the console, I think, a little stickier for
right.
the user, and makes them feel like this is, you know, an experience you want to be inside of the PlayStation world. It's a great value add, but no, it's not a killer app. As you said, I mean, it really comes down to the games, or I think, you know, the Blu-ray player in that story, I think, has not really played out yet what's going to happen with high-definition movies. And I think people, right now, it's not as important, but the question is, 18 months, 2 years from now, how important is that Blu-ray player going to be in the PlayStation 3, and how important is HD DVD going to be? And I think that's, you know, sort of the second part of the story that people aren't really looking at right now, because I think now not enough consumers really care about getting high-definition movie playback, but as more and more HDTVs are out there, then does that become an even more important part of the equation?
Well, and to your point, you know, is it going to be an important part of the equation, but will the delivery mechanism change? And all of a sudden, you know, we've heard Sony hand wave in the past, and everyone said this, well, that disc-based is going the old way. You know,
right.
maybe it is going to be digital distribution, so maybe by the time that Middle America or the rest of the world is ready to embrace the high-def era, that we've already made the jump to a digital delivery system.
You got to give me more than a 20-gig hard drive, though.
Yeah, I know. I'll send you
one day, right?
I'll send you another one so you can have two. Right? That's what big VIP says. Just buy another one.
Gotta get the ultimate hard drive.
Yeah, exactly, the big one. Listen, Jeff. I know you have Peter Molyneux coming up on one of your episodes of Gamehead coming up. Correct?
That's right. Yeah, actually, this Friday night we've got a great show that we shot with Peter. Actually, after his panel at Game Developers Conference, we went up to Pier 39 in San Francisco and hung out with Peter and sort of talked a lot about his career and obviously about Fable 2, and got some kind of exclusive tidbits on what we can expect in Fable 2. But it's interesting to talk to Peter because he's a guy that's really been raked over the coals the past couple of years. And you remember, you know, with Fable about
sure.
sort of the promises that he made. And, you know, a lot of people he's such a great... I don't want to say salesman because it makes it sound too sort of mechanical, but he's such a great sort of evangelist for
yeah.
his ideas and his dreams for games that he sort of gets ahead of himself sometimes with his promises. So we had a really good sort of conversation about you know, what Fable became and what he wants Fable 2 to become. So yeah, that's this Friday night on Spike TV, and then you can watch the show afterwards on SpikeTV.com and on GameTrailers.com. So make sure to tune in and check it out.
Jeff Keighley, thanks so much for your time today, my friend. So can I have you on again in a few months?
I would love to. This console war is not going to end anytime soon. So
yeah, exactly.
It's, it's fun to come on. No, and I appreciate that you have a sort of broad perspective of all the systems out there. And, you know, even though this is, you know, part of Xbox, it's sort of not, and I love that you're able to sort of intelligently talk about all these consoles.
Yeah, that's what it's all about. I mean, everyone always asks me when I bought the Wii. I don't know who asked me this. It was somebody when I was.
They call you traitors.
No, they looked at me and they said, "Oh, can you have that?" And everybody, you know what it's like when you're in a business. You have to know what your competition's doing. So I absolutely,
right.
you know, I use Google every day because I want to know what they're doing.
Remember when the PS3 came out? I was talking to your PR people. I mean, they had one of the first guys in line at the store to get a PS3 so they could just, you know, see what it is and experience it.
Get
a sense of what the competition is.
Yeah, it went on sale, and then Friday, I was over there, and we basically did a complete, you know, teardown, meaning we took it out of the box, we looked at it, we played with it, and we had to know what the competition is, because everyone, you know, we're, at the end of the day, we need to know what the landscape looks like. That's why I'm excited to see, you know, this Home thing. What's it going to be?
Are they going to let you in the Home beta program, though, maybe?
I hope so. Hey, so, I have an open invitation of anybody from Sony on my show, and no one has ever taken me up on that.
No one has ever appeared?
No one has ever appeared, and I don't know. I don't know who to contact about this. I'd like to get
to their top PR guy. Do you think they'd really come on your show?
Dave Carricker. I'd love to have him on. I'd love to have Dave on. You know, let's just sit down and talk for a little bit. So.
You and Dave, head to head.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe we can make it an episode of Game Head at the very least. You think you have to meet on neutral territory?
You know what? If you're going to be the referee, then I'm okay to do that. So we'll come on board. All right.
All right, hook it up.
All right, Jeff, I'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Major.
All right, thank you, Jeff Keighley from GameSlice. Make sure you tune in and watch his interview with Peter Molyneux. So the next interview I have is, you've played Jetpack, right?
I have not played Jetpack, actually.
Really?
No. This is one I missed.
So you're excited about that release this week.
I am. Jetpack's a retro release from the old Sinclair Spectrum, right? It's a remake of
It goes back there.
I had a Timex Sinclair ZX81. I did not have a Spectrum. I wanted a Spectrum.
What was the difference?
The Spectrum had more memory. It had color.
It had 16K of memory.
Yes. It had, color was the big thing.
Right.
And it was very cool for the time, but at the time it came out, there was no chance.
So remember that they were kind of little, right? And they had touch screen or touch keypads.
It was like the keypad. More people might know the Atari 400 PC.
Sure.
It was one of those, kind of like the old touchpads you'd order with at like McDonald's that they would punch your order into.
I'm sure my listeners know what those are. that's right. You said Sinclair, and all of a sudden my ZX80 came rocketing back into my head.
Yep.
That's old school. Because they used to store on cassette.
Cassette, or you just type it in every time you fired the stupid thing up.
Right,
there was a little memory pack. There was the printer add-on. Those were kind of cool.
Wasn't it a thermal printer?
Yes, I think so.
See? I'm right there with you.
Yeah.
I remember those days.
We're both old.
Wow. Yeah. Anyway, so I don't think Nick and Andy used a ZX80 to create the new version of Jetpack, which is coming out this week.
I'm guessing no.
I'm guessing, yeah. I'm pretty much agreeing with you. So it's coming out this Wednesday.
Yes.
And it's going to be 400 points. Did you know that?
I saw that on the press release. When you look at what's in there, I remember seeing 128 levels.
Yeah.
I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a good deal. So I'm looking forward to giving it a shot.
And you get the classic one.
Yes, which is cool.
All right, so we're going to talk to those guys right now. So here's Nick and Andy from Rare talking about Jetpack.
Hi, how are you doing? Hi, Larry.
Well, I'm doing great. So Nick and Andy, Nick, we're going to start with you. Nick, what are you working on? So I mean, obviously, I'm having you on the line here because Jetpack Refueled is the big Xbox Live Arcade title next week, and you guys worked on that. Nick, what did you do with that title?
I was lead software and did a lot of the design on it as well. So we had a fairly small team, obviously, so you've got to sort of double up roles on that, really. But yeah, most of the software was me, really.
Got it. So when people are playing, you know, Jetpack Refueled, which is being released next week on the Xbox Live Arcade for 400 points, they're going to be playing with your code. Is that a good thing to say?
Yeah, that's a good thing to say. And one of our other sort of programmers that did a hell of a lot of live work as well, a guy called Jens Reistermeyer, who's should be credited as well. Thanks, Jens, if you're listening.
So one of the things I'd like to go through is this is the big title for, you know, the arcade next week or, you know, the coming week. What can people expect in Jetpack Refueled, and how does it? How did you modernize? I mean, this is really from the 1983 classic version. So what did you guys do to kind of bring it up to speed? And then I want to hand it off to Andy because he obviously worked on the title as well.
Yeah, well, it's a sort of a bit of a funny story, actually, because the original Jetpack on the Sinclair Spectrum, which I don't know whether you guys even had in the States, but was one of the first games I ever played. And I remember it being like this kind of real arcade experience. You know, it sort of, back in the day, it was like the Defender for sort of home computers.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to like recapture that now. I mean, if you go back and play it now, it's quite sort of slow and pedestrian because obviously everything's moved on and become a lot more glitzy, a lot more sort of adrenaline fueled.
Sure.
So we wanted to try and get that over again, that, you know, if somebody coming to it new was playing it, they'd sort of feel how I felt when I first played it like 20 odd years ago.
Now, you've actually worked on it. Tell me about some of the titles that you've worked on.
I did a lot of the graphics programming on Cameo Elements of Power. Mm-hmm. As well, and before that, Star Fox Adventures.
Wow, so you've been around, so you've seen that, and you made a comment there about, you know, the 1983 version being a little bit slower. Have you noticed that as obviously as a game, as somebody who plays games, but also somebody who's designed them as well, that games are getting faster and faster for whatever reason, that the audience wants faster games?
Yeah, I mean, they're getting faster, but you can only do that up to a point, obviously. I mean, if you look back sort of to the early 80s and you think of things like Defender and Robotron, you couldn't really go much faster than those.
Yeah.
But you want that intense experience, but you also need to modernize it as well.
Sure.
Which we were very conscious of keeping the core Jetpack elements from the original of building the rockets, taking off to the next level. But getting much more sort of complex gameplay within just that bare mechanic. So we had to do it with lots of different aliens and the way the aliens interact. There's a way to defeat or weak point for every single alien in the game. but they don't always become apparent. And then when you get mixes of aliens coming together, then in a little way like Geometry Wars, there is always a way to get out of trouble and, you know, to beat it and get to the next level. It just gets quite tricky once you get into sort of the 30s, 40s, and upwards, you know, all the way to level 128.
You know, you were talking about some of the games as you developed. What was it like developing an Xbox Live Arcade title? Because there's certain, you know, there's space limitations around it. It's a little bit different than making a game that you're going to press onto a DVD. What was that process like, having to code it?
It's an interesting one. You've obviously got everything you do has got a very tight space requirement. So you've got to be thinking about that all the time because of the download limit.
Right.
There's a benefit there as well because you've not got so much code really to worry about. It's liberating in that way.
Right.
And if you're thinking of a smaller, tighter experience as well, you're probably not pushing the hardware as much in other areas. So yeah, while you've got sort of download memory limitations, as far as the actual physical memory of the console's concerned and the speed the console's running at, it's not such a problem. You know, if you look back on something like Cameo, I'd be going to the lead engineer and saying, oh, can I have, like, you know, 100,000 grass polygons or whatever for a level, and you'd be like, that's going to require some serious optimization.
Right.
But with something like Jetpack, it's like, yeah, well, you know, we'll have 250,000 particles. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah,
yeah.
We can have 4 million. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah. Is it also a little bit more challenging because you have to, you're working off of a classic? You know, you've got existing intellectual property IP that you're dealing with, as opposed with Cameo, which was kind of new. Was it difficult kind of bringing over the feel of Jetpack to Jetpack Refueled?
Not as difficult as you would expect as far as sort of the way it controls. Yes, it's more finessed. But to be perfectly sort of honest, as far as that kind of thing's concerned, there's not that much of a challenge with that. The challenge is getting the balance there, but
right,
providing you're going to go through a lot of iterations and a lot of people playing it, and also knowing that you're not your own audience, because if you've been playing this game for sort of 6 months, you know, 8 months, 12 months, off and on, you get pretty good at it. And then you give it to somebody else who's never played it before and you realize you've made it way too hard.
Yeah.
That was one of the biggest challenges as far as the playability was concerned.
I want to talk to Andy about what it was like going producing this game. You know, Andy, what was your role in this game, and how you know, what does a producer do on an arcade title?
Well, it was probably slightly different to what a producer role would be normally over here at Rare for a full 360 title. And mm-hmm. As Nick said, we had a lot smaller team, so it was sort of a core team of sort of three people, and then we had sort of like six or seven other people sort of dipping in and out and sort of producing content for the actual title. So it was different in that sense, in that we weren't always all together, so you've got to make sure that the team is sort of focused and pulling in the right direction, even though they're not always there. As well, it's a case of, as Nick was saying, he was sort of dipping into the design, and so the design was pushed by myself and him, mm-hmm. Jens as well, and a few other people outside of the team. So it's trying to rein all of that in at the same time. So it was slightly different, but good at the same time.
Andy, what are some of the titles that you've worked on in the past that maybe some of the listeners would know?
I helped out in a production role on Conker for the Xbox.
Uh-huh.
I also helped out on the other titles while they were going for release of the 360,
mm-hmm.
Cameo, but more in a sort of off-team position. I suppose the role that I've had has been more of a sort of a global company, one of sort of dipping in and helping as and when required.
Sure.
So it's not sort of specifically always been on team. It's always been sort of like helping as and when.
Some of the I talked with Nick about this a moment ago, that it's this, that Jetpack Refueled is kind of a modernized version of the 1983 version. What are some of the features in the new version that when people get onto Xbox Live Arcade this week to download it, what are they going to see? What are some of the new features?
Well, of course, the main thing that we have done is we've got Live on there.
Yep.
Something that, you know, we never would have had on the Spectrum back in those days, or any of the other versions of Jetpack. And so it was hard to do. It was hard to get in.
Sure.
because as live is, as everybody knows, it's a hard thing to get going.
Right.
But we think it works quite well. It seems to be quite a tight game for people when they're playing. You get a lot of sort of Twitch gameplay of people doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got the live aspect of it. You've got the whole achievements.
Yeah, what are some of the achievements that people can expect? Give me one or two of the cool ones.
We've got a nice viral one, which we use, which people will be able to see when they actually start playing it. I won't give away too many details on it.
Okay.
But no, we thought it was pretty good. So they should enjoy getting that, and hopefully it's something where they can't specifically go out and try and get it.
Okay.
It's a case of, you know, playing, and maybe you will get it along the way.
So Jetpack Refueled is kind of based on the classic. Do we also get the classic as well with this download?
Yeah, we've included that. So just for all the sort of the retro fans out there who who still wanted to play it, it's there in all its glory. We tweaked it a little bit so that it's running at a faster speed than it would have done basically back in the old days.
Yeah.
So it plays quite nice.
Yeah, processors are a little bit faster nowadays, aren't they?
That's it.
What, you know, working on this title, you know, I talked to Nick a little bit about this. What are some of the things that you talked about, some of the other titles you worked on, but what are some of the concerns you have? You know, you've got the space limitation. You know, it's a different type of game than some of the other games that you've worked on. Was that refreshing? Did you have to relearn some things as a producer?
It was okay. It wasn't too bad in the sense. I mean, the main things that we had to watch out for, I suppose, were content, because we have a lot of sort of creative, talented guys over here who just want to get as much high-quality content in there as possible. So, of course, you're limited with it in the sense of the amount of backgrounds you can have, the amount of baddies, you know, how many frames Jetman can use.
Right.
The amount of audio you can use and that side of it. So it's sort of trying to sort of rein that in so that people are happy, but, you know, the content is still there and is still at a good high level.
I mean, I know a lot of people are really excited about Jetpack because it's like I say, it's one of the classics. We'll have it on Xbox Live Arcade this Wednesday. It's going to be 400 points. Nick and Andy, I appreciate you guys taking the time to chat with me today.
No worries. Thanks very much.
All right, thanks, guys. Jetpack coming out this Wednesday. Xbox Live Arcade, 400 points and 128 levels?
128 new levels, I think, plus the retro levels.
Plus the retro levels. So you're getting it all right there, Jetpack. All right, we're going to swing into the Name the Game section. So I'm going to play the little clip right now. There's a little clip. Edie, do you think you know what that is?
I do not know what that is.
You sure? Okay, I'll give you a little clue. It was a cabinet game.
Okay.
And it had a specialized input device.
Specialized input device.
Right. So,
oh, okay.
Okay, so
yeah.
Of course, I'll let you go ahead and say what it is.
Okay.
This is the last week's Name the Game was?
Paperboy.
Paperboy, absolutely right. So we have, I'm going to give you the honors. Here are all the correct answers. So basically what you do, the way this game works is you send me an email. I play the clip. You send an email, major@xbox.com. I take all the correct answers. I pull out one winner, and this winner's the week of... Let's try that again. Try that again. The winner this week is
Citric Wolf.
Congratulations. Paperboy was the correct answer. You guessed it. You grabbed yourself a Plantronics Major Nelson headset, and that paves the way for another Name the Game. And so here is this week's Name the Game.
Yeah. Oh.
Ow.
Oh.
All right, if you think you know what that is, send me an email, major@xbox.com, subject line, name the game, : what your guess is in the body. Please put your gamer tag if you have one, and then we'll enter you into next week.
And if you don't have a gamer tag, you need to go to xbox.com and sign up for a silver account,
right,
because everyone should have a gamer tag.
Because they're free. Unless you're listening to this on Tuesday the 27th.
Between midnight and 2 p.m. Pacific.
And you can't do that.
In which case, just wait until later this afternoon just and then go sign up.
Keep hitting F5. Wow, yeah, that was a crazy... That was a great game, wasn't that, Paperboy?
Paperboy was a lot of fun. I was actually playing the Xbox Live... excuse me, the Live Arcade version last night.
Because because remember, it's 3D, because it's off on an angle.
Yeah, it's... For anyone who remembers Zaxxon, it's kind of the same thing.
So when...
No, I'm just saying, I just want to make sure we talked about it. I gave you the hint of it had a specialized controller.
Yes.
What was that specialized controller? Explain that to people.
It was actually a set of bicycle handlebars.
Right.
So that you were steering your paperboy riding his little bike through the neighborhood throwing papers. So you steered by controlling your bicycle.
And you pushed it forward to give it gas, or not gas, but to accelerate and back to decelerate.
I don't remember if it was that or if it was a throttle like
maybe
a motorcycle.
It was a throttle.
And then there was a little red button that you used to actually throw the paper.
Dilute. Diddly-din? Diddly-din?
Yes.
Diddly-din?
Exactly.
Oh, God, I spent so much money on that in the arcade when I was that. That one was probably, I think it was in my college, early years of college, and that was a great game.
I played it some. It wasn't one of the ones I got hooked on, but I played it enough to definitely remember the controller, the cabinet, kind of the experience of Paperboy.
So, anyway, that was last week's Name of the Game. We just played the sound from this week. So if you know what this week's Name of the Game is, send me an email, major@xbox.com. Or if you don't have access to email, then you can take a 57-inch LCD panel, write my name on the back, and mail it to me with your guess.
Yes, because I'm sure there's a lot of people listening to your cast
right.
that don't have the
don't
ability
have email.
To email.
That, no, yeah. no, no, no. Uh-huh. I'm kidding. You know what? I'm going to give people another chance to win a Major Nelson headset right now.
Okay.
You want to know what I want to do?
Uh-oh.
We have 130, 140 Xbox 360 titles out there.
There's at least... I know there's more than 140. I don't remember
All
what
right.
the number is.
I've lost count. And I don't know on my gamer tag up at Xbox.com... which ones I haven't played. Which ones have I not put into the console?
As of when?
As of right now, as of Monday, when this show goes out. So, ones that have been released earlier.
Okay.
So, prior to the 27th of March, anything that's been released before the 27th of March, 2007, or 26th or 27th of March, what am I missing?
There's
got to be a couple arcade titles in there.
There's probably a couple arcade games. Now, I assume we're only talking about titles released in North America.
Correct,
if
yes.
If it's a Japanese only or right. European only, then
right.
we're not counting that.
That's null and void, because my account is North American.
I'm trying to think of what... I've got a couple guesses. Am I giving them out, or are we going to
well,
just
you,
let
go ahead and give
figure?
Them... I mean, give a couple guesses. People are going to go up and take a look anyway.
So, I'm betting you haven't played all the Cabela's games, because there's... the Africa game, I don't know how many there are, but there's a bunch of them.
Right.
What else might you not have played? I'm not sure that you've played Final Fantasy XI Retail, the beta. Does that show up as the same game on Xbox.com?
That's a good question.
I don't remember.
That's a great question.
What else might you not have played? You and I are both pretty good about trying everything for at least 5 minutes when it comes in.
Right.
So I'm betting there's not more than 10 or so games that you've missed.
I'm thinking probably arcade games. So if you think you know what that is, go up to Xbox.com to my profile, go through, take inventory because I'm too lazy to, and tell me what I missed. And if I'm going to go through it as well. And if you get all of them, I'll send you in a Major Nelson headset. That seems like a fair trade, doesn't it?
Now, is this just for the first person who figures it out, or...
Yeah, it'll be random.
Okay.
It'll be random.
Put them all in a hat.
Yeah, put them all, like we do this.
Okay.
Because to your point, most of the games we get in, we play immediately. And some of the games we actually play beforehand on our developer kits. So it's not like I probably haven't played the game. I just haven't played it on my Major Nelson account.
Right.
That's just to let everybody know. It's not like I'm ignoring all of our wonderful games that we have on our platform.
That's if you're a gamer, it's hard to ignore a game when it comes out.
Right?
It's like, ooh, shiny new thing. Must
see. Yeah. You and I are throwing it in, and we come into the office here and play it on the big screen. And I remember the first time we put through Crackdown in. Remember that? I threw Crackdown in, and you.
Oh, yes, I do.
Because Paul Bunyan was in here, he played it, and then you came in. You're like, oh, I don't really like sandbox games. All of a sudden, I think I went away to CES that weekend. Or I went away someplace that weekend.
Because I went to CES, too. So.
It was right before it released, and you just told me, you're like, I can't stop playing it.
For me, it was all about the agility orbs.
Right.
That got me into the game.
And two months later, it still is.
Moving on. Anyways, that kept my attention long enough to let me appreciate the rest of the game.
Right.
Because it's just not normally my cup of tea.
So we always come in here, we throw in the new games, we literally shut the door, draw the blinds, and start saying, oh, what is this all about?
Yes, and more often than not, we actually come away going, ooh, this is pretty good.
Yeah, there's some good stuff. So if you think you know what, go through the inventory up on Xbox.com under my Major Nelson account. What am I missing? And of course, I'll drop it in and give you credit and name you the next, you know. I'll give you a couple weeks, because this, you know.
2 weeks?
Maybe 2 weeks. Although they can look at Major Nelson, my profile, during the downtime.
No,
they won't be able to look. So they can't look at my profile.
No, because that pulls from.
Oh, that's right.
The
pulls
Xbox
from the
Live service
from
to
the
get
database.
Your record
right.
of what you've played.
All right.
How badly.
All right.
You
so
suck.
I'll give you a couple weeks to come up with this. Yes. So you know, probably by the second week of April, we'll still get that. So I want to go into the next section, which is
Xbox 101.
Xbox 101 with Major Nelson.
So E, since you're the special correspondent in studio guest. What are we ever going to call
this
you?
This is a studio?
Yeah, it's a studio. It's got two microphones and two people, so it's a studio.
If it was a studio, would it have air conditioning right over
your
head?
Don't get me
going
on that. I was telling E about this before we started. I always complain about this when I record these interviews in my office. You know, I do probably, in anybody in this building, I do the most with audio, other than the games guys. They're in a different building. But I'm saying in this building where I sit, and I swear to God, I have the loudest office.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And here we are on a Sunday afternoon, and there's gale force winds coming out of the top here.
And I'm mentally comparing it to Marty O'Donnell's studio in Bungie. Which I've been lucky
enough
to see.
And it's dead silent.
And it's gorgeous. I mean, I don't know what most of the gear in there does,
yeah.
But it's really cool looking.
Yeah,
and
I'm not allowed in there.
And it's obviously soundproof, and yeah.
I'm not allowed in there. So,
that's another story.
Yeah, I'm not allowed in there. So, anyway, so since I've got you in the studio... my office. I wanted to talk about Xbox 101, and what is your tip, E? What is your hot tip for people that just got their Xbox 360 or maybe don't know about this feature?
Today's tip is Xbox Live Arcade auto-download. So go to your dashboard,
mm-hmm.
go to the games blade,
okay.
and select Xbox Live Arcade.
So you have to be online?
Yes.
Okay, you have to be online.
On the left side of the screen, you're going to see four buttons. My Arcade Games, Download Games, the last played game button, which for you says Geometry Wars right now.
Yeah, I think Striker was in my office.
And underneath that, auto downloads. And by default, that is set to off.
Okay, what is that? Explain to people what that is.
So if you turn auto download on, then while you're sitting at this Xbox Live Arcade page, or when you are playing any single player Xbox Live Arcade game, now this won't work if you're playing co-op, if you're playing multiplayer, but if you're playing a single player Live Arcade game, it will go to Xbox Live and say, are there any arcade games I haven't downloaded on this box yet?
Mm-hmm.
And it will automatically download them in the background. You don't have to go through the list and say, I want this one, I want this one. If there's 40 arcade games out there that you haven't downloaded, it will download them all in the background for you as long as you're on this page or in a single-player game.
So the key is that you have to go into this blade, go into the games blade, and then go down to Xbox Live Arcade. And as long as you, and then you kick off a game from here, one of your arcade titles, that's when it starts.
It will actually, while you're sitting here at the Xbox Live Arcade page, if you have auto downloads turned on, it will do it here also.
Right. They just start streaming in.
And then you can go play Castlevania, and every few minutes you'll get another little bink saying, hey, this is downloaded. Hey, this is downloaded.
So there's the Xbox 101 tip for this week is go into your Xbox Live Arcade, go turn auto downloads on to, and let's be clear, it downloads the demo.
Yes.
It's not like downloading the full versions and buying them for you.
Yes, but the nice thing is you don't then have to re-download it if you want the full version.
Right, because like some other online services, you have to download one, which is the demo, if the demo is 130 megs, and then you got to download 130 megs, the full version. We download basically a version, and then when you purchase it, we download like the little key that unlocks it.
Yeah, it's... The simple way to think of it is the trial version and the paid version of the same game.
Right.
And you download that once, and if you decide you like it enough to buy it, you buy it, and we do some magic that says, you know, your gamer tag has just bought this. Boom, done.
Just
a couple seconds.
And then you can start getting your achievements and all the other fun stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's good stuff. So there you go. Thank you, E, for the Xbox 101 moment. So usually, but this is about the time of the show where I talk about gadgets. You want to talk about gadgets?
Gadgets are good.
What do you got? I've been so busy with the security stuff this week, I haven't had a chance to do any gadget hunting.
I have not done a lot. Getting ready for Tuesday's maintenance has chewed up a lot of time. I've ordered a couple gadgets.
What'd you order?
Coming on April 3rd, I have two Guitar Hero guitars.
Right.
So I actually went to, I'll give them a little plug, redoctane.com.
Right.
They've got a nice bundle, which is Guitar Hero 2 for 360.
Right.
Two guitars and a bag that will hold both guitars so you can take them to a friend's house.
Mm-hmm.
The whole kit and caboodle at a pretty good price.
Right.
So I've got that on order. That'll be here in... I guess just a week and a couple of days. So
right.
Very much looking forward to that. I love Guitar Hero.
Yep.
So that's on the way. What other gadgets? I feel kind of bad because I haven't bought a lot of gadgets lately.
And so I must point something out, though. Ian and I obviously have each other on our MSN Messenger. Literally all day long, we're sending links back and forth to Engadget or Gizmodo or any of the other stuff. So we're watching this stuff. We know what's going on out there.
Yeah. We like shiny objects.
Right.
And gadgets equal shiny.
I talked about this new Dell laptop. I have the 1210. I talked about this last week.
And I've been thinking I might want something like that. I like the laptop I have now, but it's kind of big. It's nice having the big screen. It's right. Got a widescreen, I think it's 1920 by 1200 resolution
wow.
screen. But it's fairly hefty, and I'm carrying that thing around at work pretty much all day.
Yeah, I really do like this machine. One of the challenges I've run into is that the vertical is just, it's not as good as, it's 1280 by 800, so I only have 800 high to go through.
Right.
And it's just, I'm getting used to it, but I went from that size screen to this one, and it was a shocker.
You'd be scrolling a lot.
A lot.
The downside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But and now, I'm getting used to it now.
I wonder, when I'm sitting there in Outlook trying to go through 1,000 mails to find something, am I going to spend all day with the mouse wheel going up, down, up, down, up, down?
You know what I would like to talk about? This is not really gadgets, but, you know, you have Vista installed. I have Vista installed. I found, and I need to go into my pictures to find this. I'll put a link off to this if I can remember. So when you buy Vista, regardless of one of the 247 versions, when you buy Vista, you get some desktop images.
Yes.
And they're really cool. They're really, like, nice. There's, like, oceans and all sorts of very, very calm scenes. Well, I found the guy. I don't know where I saw this link, but the guy who Microsoft, the Vista team, hired to go out and shoot these, the photographer to shoot these.
Right.
And he had a whole series that were rejected that, for whatever reason, maybe it was space or whatever. But these, that he had shot, you know, clearly he shot, you know, hundreds of photos, and they went with, you know, 10 or whatever it was. But so I found them, and I'll put a link up to that. But some of these are just gorgeous. And it turns out that they're from, they were shot down in your neck of the woods.
Yes, the Oregon coast.
The Oregon coast.
Which I found really amusing, because my desktop for years, I've kind of cycled through a few pictures, and one of them is a sunset on the Oregon coast that I took that actually looks kind of similar to some of these shots, although there's no doubt this guy's a much better photographer than I am.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it really kind of looks like
home. That's something we don't see a lot here. I'm looking at snow.
Not a lot.
Not a lot.
Nope.
But so these are gorgeous. So I'll put a link up to that. And I've never been to the Oregon coast.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Ever.
It is beautiful. And one of the nice things about it is it's 99% public. There are essentially no private beaches in the state of Oregon.
Oh.
And so you can just walk up and down the beach as far as you want to.
And keep going.
Yeah, and I take
Washington
my dogs
to
out
California.
To this little quiet town that I'm not going to name because
right.
they don't want the publicity. But it's like 2,500 people in the town.
Right.
And I can take my dogs with me and walk up and down the beach for an hour and not see a soul.
Wow.
And that's just wonderful.
So these are the photos for Windows Vista. Or, you know, if you're feeling radical, you could actually probably put them on your Mac desktop.
Ooh.
So, or your Linux desktop.
Give it to the man.
Yeah. Exactly. All right, so what else do I have to talk about? I think that's pretty much it for gadgets this week. I'm just looking around my desk to see if you know what? We haven't talked about this.
What?
We haven't talked about the Sony launch last week in Europe.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
Wow. What can we say there?
Yeah. I'm surprised.
Yeah.
I'm really curious to see, you know, you get one vibe off of launch day and then another one after a couple of weeks or a couple
right,
of months.
Right.
So I'm really curious to see how it goes. That's a lot of money to spend on one box.
Yeah.
You know, and if it's worth it to you, great. Enjoy
yep.
your PS3.
Yeah.
But it's
you don't
still,
have one yet, do you?
I still do not have one.
Right.
I feel weird because I have every other console to come out for the last 10 years sitting in my house. But there isn't the game yet on the PS3 that makes me go, you know what? I don't care how expensive it is. I've got to play this.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it again. Tycho and I were talking about that the other night. Where's that game? Yeah. Although the folding at home stuff is cool.
That's kind of cool, but I'm not going to, you know,
yeah.
buy a console that expensive.
You can do that on your PC.
Folding at home.
You can do that on your PC.
I don't need a Blu-ray player. I've got an HD DVD player.
Right.
I hooked up.
Although, what's the deal with the movies, guys?
Yeah, more
HD DVD movies.
Some new
come
releases
on.
Would be nice. There's Video Marketplace.
Yeah, that's true.
So the stuff on Video Marketplace looks really good. I've got, you know, a pretty ridiculous DVD collection at this point. And I get, like, HBO High Def, Showtime High Def through DirecTV.
Can I talk about that for a second? You and I haven't talked about this.
Okay.
So I used to have HBO. And I called up last week to Comcast. And I said, look, I want to switch. I want to get to Showtime. Because The Sopranos isn't on for a couple weeks, so I want to switch. The reason I switched is because there's this radio show I listen to, because everyone knows I love audio. It's called This American Life, and it's on NPR.
Okay.
And they made a television version of it, and it premiered this last week.
Okay.
And it's fantastic. Ira Glass is just a fantastic interviewer, and so I really wanted to get Showtime to watch this show. So, sure enough, I watched the show. It's been great. That was about a week ago, but between the time I made the switch and the time that This American Life was on, I've been desperately searching for something on Showtime to watch, and there's nothing. Not really any good movies.
It comes and goes. This is why I have, I forget what it's called these days. It used to be like the DirecTV Platinum package.
Right, you're on DirecTV, so it's a little different.
And so basically I get, you know, all the movies channels, all the right. sports channels, etc. And it comes in really handy because I have nights when I don't sleep.
Right.
Or I'm up until 4 a.m.
Right.
And actually, a friend of mine found a medical disorder that's basically people who, you know, are awake when vampires would be awake and not normal humans.
I thought it was
and
people with single letter gamer tags.
No, that's different. And I wish I could remember the name of it, and I just can't. But
everyone's going to write in and tell us.
Yeah, probably. So when you can't sleep and it's 3 a.m., it's great to have all that stuff. And I have a TiVo.
Right. So enough said.
And it knows, you know, hey, he likes this, he doesn't like this. Right. So it just is randomly recording stuff. So when it's the middle of the night and I can't sleep, I've always got something recorded. Even if there's nothing on right now on HBO or Showtime or whatever, there probably was in the last couple of days, and it's sitting there waiting.
But I got to tell you something. I went through and set up my PVR, because I have the Comcast PVR, and I'm like searching 4 days ahead. I'm like, there's nothing I want to watch. Well, there's nothing.
That's the power of the TiVo.
Right. That's the power of the TiVo. Absolutely right.
I've had my high-def TiVo for
4 years ago.
2 years?
3 years. Bought it for like $1,000. I remember the day you got it.
Well, yes. So, to be clear, I have DirecTV for one reason, and that is NFL Sunday Ticket. I'm a football junkie.
Right.
And they've started carrying almost all the games in HD.
Right.
And if you're a football fan, football in HD
that's
is
good stuff.
Unlike anything else.
Sure.
And the ability to do, you know, trick play, time shifting, back up. I want to see that catch again. I want to see it again. I want to see it. It's phenomenal.
Of course, they're logging all your information, sending it to TiVo, and they're telling you, you know, then TiVo issues a press release the day after Super Bowl and says, this is the most replayed part of the game.
Yes. And I don't care because I'm having a great experience as a customer.
Okay.
So anyways, I bought one for that. I've now had it for, I think, 2 years, or 2 years in this summer, and it has a really good idea of what I like, what I don't like.
Right.
Because after all this time of watching this show and not watching this
It's built it up. It
right,
knows.
Doing the TiVo thumbs up, thumbs down thing.
Although when I go over to your house, I do screw around with it, you know.
Oh, I totally believe it. And every once in a while, it you know, it starts recording stuff, and I'm like, why is it recording this? And then I stop and think, oh, wait, my son was watching cartoons, and yeah, okay.
When I flip it to Martha Stewart and give it all four thumbs up, you know.
Yeah. You don't want to go there, so.
But anyway, so yeah, I've just been really disappointed with Showtime. Just in terms of their movie selection. I know it's cyclical. I know that this week they'll have... But I just look at, like, HBO. When I had HBO... and I'll go back to HBO when The Sopranos kicks in again. But when I had HBO, it was like a month ago. And I think I told you this. I was looking at all the high-def stuff. I kind of searched a few days out. And it had, like, all the Star Wars movies on in high-def.
Yes.
And I recorded every single one. Yep. So they're still sitting on my hard drive at my DVR. But I still... You know, I've switched since then. But I still go back. I watched... What did I watch? Revenge of the Sith this morning.
They look really good in high def.
Right.
There's no doubt about it. Speaking of which, going back to HD DVD for a second, they did announce last week sometime, they finally put a date on the Matrix trilogy on HD DVD.
What is it?
It is...
This holiday?
No, it's... Now, before. Don't quote me on this. I'm going from memory. It was May, like the 22nd of May, somewhere late May.
So.
And I'm all over that. No question.
Yeah, I did see... You know who has the worst HD signals? Is, what is it, TNT? Or TBS? God, they're horrible.
TNT HD, they take a lot of shows that were shot in SD.
Right.
And they upscale them.
Oh,
and
God,
they do this zooming thing where they don't really upscale it well.
It is ass-tastic. I hate it.
I wasn't going to go that far. But
it's horrible.
It's less than ideal, but they do run some cool shows. I mean, Law & Order, Angel, there's lots of good stuff on there.
But there's also a lot of not so good stuff that doesn't look good. But anyway, so that's good to know. I didn't know about The Matrix. I think I've seen it in HD when I had HBO.
They announced it a long time ago as coming to HD DVD, but they never put a date on it. So everyone was like, is it really? But now that there's actually a date on it, also coming up starting this week on Discovery HD, they're rerunning all the old Planet Earth stuff. Which is amazingly cool. It looks phenomenal.
Discovery
so if you have Discovery HD,
yeah.
It starts, I think this, well, when you air this, I think it will have started the previous Sunday.
Right.
And that's going to run for a week or two, and that's also coming out
check
on
your
HD
local,
DVD.
Check your local listings. So there we go. That's our HD conversation. All right, so I think we'll wrap it up here. I think we should wrap it up.
Sure.
Okay.
I got to go play some games.
You got to play some games to get ready for the maintenance.
Yes.
So I want to thank my friends at Centricom.net. They're providing MajorNelson.com with a secured and assured hosting environment. Thank you, guys. I also want to thank CashFly for their services. Unfortunately, they are responsible for downloading the bad shows and hosting them as well as the good ones.
Which this is, of course, one of.
This is a good one, right. So thank you very much to CashFly. This is Larry Herb, Xbox Live's Major Nelson with E.
Hi.
Yeah, that was the beginning of the show. That's your outro. Right.
Okay. Bye,
thank
everybody.
I want to thank you for downloading my show. Remember, have fun, play fair, send feedback, or file a complaint, because we do listen to that stuff. Be safe, and we'll talk soon. Bye-bye. All right. It's after show time, so I need to put a disclaimer here. Employees and their families are not eligible.
They can't listen to the after show? Okay, if you work for Xbox, please turn off your music player right now.
So I have a list of disclaimers that I copy that I'm collecting from the web. And there's this, like, this is the weirdest one. Beware of owls. I think I mentioned that in a previous show.
Is this a Harry Potter disclaimer?
I don't know what this is. No Canadian coins. Not recommended for children. These are all, you know, individual sentences.
Do I have to get rid of all my Canadian coins? I have quite a few.
Shading within a garment may occur. You do?
Shading
within a garment.
So you can't wear hypercolor.
It's what it's telling me.
Okay.
Driver does not carry cash. Call toll free before digging.
Yes, that's a good one. Especially when it's wet out.
Yeah, exactly. Some assembly required. We all remember that one. Anyway, so this show may be intense for young viewers. What do you want to talk about in the after show? We talked about everything.
What's going on?
We were just neurotic.
Yeah. Although it felt like kind of a short show this week.
Well, it did feel like a short show because we had all those great interviews with Jeff Keighley and the guys from Rare.
Right. Okay.
And E. So it did feel a little bit slow, but I guarantee it wasn't slow.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
It wasn't slow.
So what are you going to play tonight?
Should I do Earth Defense? What do you want to play? Defense Force?
Actually going to a movie in a little bit.
What are you going to say?
Go see The Last Mimsy.
What is that?
It's a kind of a kid's sci-fi movie based off an old short story. Looks really good.
Who's in it?
I have no idea. I'm really bad at that kind of stuff.
Okay.
But looks interesting, so taking the kid and the girlfriend, we're going to go catch that.
We can play...
You should play some Halo 2 with us tonight.
UEFA Champions League? No, you know what? No. I haven't gotten back into Halo 2.
But it's not the game. It's the hanging out.
I know. It's the hanging
friends.
Out. It's the hanging out. Know, I know.
Because last night we had, you know, pretty much all the usual people.
Who was in?
Ace was there.
Right.
The Drunken Hamster was there. We had a couple of guys from Bungie hanging out. Bathari, KP were there. PMS Kitty was there.
One.
Who else?
I'm just counting the girls, because we have a rule.
The Drunken Hamster is a girl.
Okay, two. Okay, so kidding. Right there, you're maxed. Because I have a rule.
I can play with...
Right, I have a rule that a lot of people who played with me know on Halo, is I will only play with two or fewer women in the room. Yeah. And it's not because I don't like female girl gamers. They're great. Some of them really kick my ass.
But...
They talk too much.
Some of them talk a lot less than you do.
Oh, come on.
Seriously, you like to talk.
That's not true. They talk.
Your personality. You like to talk.
Well, yeah, well the girls I would play with sometimes, like, and to be fair, I haven't played in a while. They're having like seven conversations with four girls at the same time, and I'm like, what the hell is going on?
Which does confuse me. Yeah, I can't do that. Kind of the high point of last night was we finally told someone, mm-hmm. we put our foot down, he's not allowed to drive anymore. No more getting in the front of a Warthog. We've had it.
Oh, were you taking his keys away?
We did, because yeah. Every time he gets in a Warthog, we die. And it doesn't take long. The other day, in a 12-minute game, he blew up 12 Warthogs. And none of these were intentional. This was just...
He was driving?
Yes. He would find a Warthog, he would get in it, the Warthog would get blown up. 12 Warthogs in a 12-minute game. So okay. We took his keys away. He can gun. He can be a passenger. If he gets in one, we will betray him.
How about we play UEFA Championship League 2006-2007? Here's the official video game.
Soccer just doesn't do it for me.
Football.
I mean, no offense to people who play soccer.
Oh, that's right. We have to go through this every time the World Cup's on, don't we?
Yeah. Well, the next one's 2010,
right.
So we've got a while. But I don't have anything against the game. Just personally, I don't find it interesting. Indoor soccer is fast enough paced. I find it interesting.
By the way, what is this... stuff I've been reading about a certain mascot beating somebody up.
What?
I read this in the New York Times a couple days ago. So you went to Oregon.
Yes. Who, by the way, is in the Elite Eight.
Right.
We beat UNLV yesterday.
Right.
Sunday, Friday. We are playing Florida to go to the Final Four.
So this show is, it's actually, we're recording this before that show.
Yes.
So you may or may not be, so that's why I had to get you, because if they lost, you'd be miserable.
Yeah, I should probably just not come to work on Monday if they lose.
Which you can't, because there's maintenance. But I happened to read something in the New York Times last week about how the Duck and another mascot like got into a fist fight.
No.
Yeah.
The Duck did not get into a fist fight.
That's the way I read it.
No. You're thinking of somebody else's mascot. The Oregon Duck did not get into a fist fight. For one thing, ducks don't have fists.
They got into a fin fight.
Fin fight? He's not a fish.
They got fins. They got a wing. They got into a wing fight.
You have no idea what you're talking about.
I'm
you're
telling
making
you,
this
I read it. I'm going to find it for you, and I'm going to put a link to it. I remember reading this.
Sure.
It was all about mascots in games and how the game at the Final Four level, the rules for mascots are actually different.
What?
Yeah, the rules for mascots are much different.
Like, they're not allowed on the court?
They can't go past half court. They can't touch, like, apparently during regular season.
No dunking.
I'm serious. The rules are very different.
Why would you change the rules for the Final Four? That'd be like, okay, the three-pointer is from 19 feet 9
right.
inches until the Final Four, then it's the NBA distance three. What?
Yeah, I don't know.
That's crazy.
I'm going to link off to this story.
Okay. I don't believe you. You're making this
ducks,
up. It's some
you.
Other mascot.
Some... What other school has duck as a mascot?
It wasn't a duck.
I'm telling you, it was a duck.
You thought it had fins or fists. You don't know.
What else do you want to talk about?
Oh, geez. What else
We're in the
is
after
going
show.
On? I honestly, my brain is spinning so much on the maintenance, I'm having trouble thinking of other things.
Really?
A bunch of people are on spring break right now. I wish I was on spring break.
Really? Who's on spring break? I don't know anybody on spring break.
Are you kidding? Oh, everyone has been... half my friends have been either on spring break in the last week or two or are on spring break right now.
Really?
Yeah, the BCC is in between quarters right now. A bunch of schools are off. Spring break for my son's elementary school comes up here in a week, I think.
So there's a lot going on.
Yeah, although first he's playing Shrek in the school play, so.
He is?
He is.
Like the lead?
He is, yes, he's the lead. He's
wow.
Shrek, so.
That's kind of cool.
Which, sadly, is on Tuesday, so we've got to get the maintenance over in time so I can get over there and watch.
Oh, that's...
How often does your son play Shrek?
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. So. I'm actually over at New York Times right now, and I'm reading this because I'm so furious about this.
If you had actually found a story about the duck getting into a fight, you would not have waited until now to send it to me.
But
you would
remember,
have instantly sent
Do you remember
it
last
me.
Night I called you, or no, it was Friday night when I called you, and you said, I said, hey, I got to call you. And you said, I can't because I'm watching the game.
Right.
That's why.
You would have IM'd it to me. Because you IM'd me, and you're like, hey, I'm hopping in the car, I'm going to call you. And I was like, don't. I'm watching the Sweet 16.
I'm going to find this.
So
anyway, so, all right, we're gonna wrap it up right now, but I'm going to find this and
No,
prove.
You're not.
I am. I'm going to find this. In fact, let's do a search on ducks. Anybody out there who has seen this?
Oh, by the way, wait, before we go.
Yes.
How's Syracuse doing in the NCAA this year?
We sucked.
Oh.
Wait, here it is.
You didn't even get in, did you? Oh.
Here it is. It's called Fuzzy Madness Mascots Gone Wild. So there it is.
Except it's talking about the Texas Longhorn mascot.
Wait a minute. It says the Utah left and Oregon mascots were allowed back on the floor after being banished for fighting during a game in March of 2003.
2003. You said it like...
You're right.
That's a long time ago.
So,
you're aware of that.
So you're
that's
right.
actually 4 years.
I'm just telling you. And look, he's got hands. He's got fists.
No. That's a wing.
So anyway, I will send you a link to this story. But there it is. Right? Is that your duck? Is that your duck?
2003.
Is that your duck?
You didn't say 2003.
It's your duck.
Wah.
All right. I will. All right. That's it. After show done.
Dun 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 dun.
All right. Goodbye. Goodbye. I'm cutting it off.